you know, about that point, you know, it was sloppy out there, you know, and I mean, you know, it was sloppy, and I felt that, you know, he's been, you know, relatively consistent from inside the 25-yard line. We felt that we could, you know, get him in position to win the game, and unfortunately, we didn't get it done. Kind of like them when they set up their guy to get the field goal they didn't need at the point of the time, same deal.
Well, that's how we're going to start off. That was, of course, Virginia Tech and Marshall yesterday playing a very close game, a game that not many people expected to be close. I know here on the 4th and Short podcast, we did not really even talk much about that game, but it ended up being a triple overtime game in Blacksburg yesterday. I'm Andrew Brown, and I'm joined by
Will Patton.
And, of course, this is the 4th and Short podcast, and you have found us at 4thandshort.com. And wow, that's a very interesting game in Blacksburg yesterday. Did you even think for a second that would be close?
No, and what's so strange, because if you haven't listened to us, we're both Georgia Tech fans, and when the schedule came out
right
at the beginning of the season, and Georgia Tech found out that we would have 5 days in between two divisional opponents between UNC and Virginia Tech, it really made me mad.
Right. It wasn't favorable for us.
It wasn't favorable because not only do we have to play two games in 5 days, which is tough for anybody to do, we have to do it against two pretty good teams in our own division. And
sure,
division games are extremely important
right
to win these games. And what made it even worse was that Virginia Tech had a non-conference opponent. And, you know, Marshall, they're not necessarily a pushover, but they're not a divisional opponent.
Right. They're not North Carolina.
They're not North Carolina. And when I looked at that, I'm like, Virginia Tech's going to be able to use this game as a warm-up for us.
Just kind of cruise.
Yeah, they'll be able to cruise, and we're going to have a hard-fought win against, you know, or a hard-fought game against North Carolina, and they're going to be able to put their scrubs in there in the fourth quarter
right
and you know, start getting ready for us. And when I heard, and I didn't watch very much of this game, but I heard that the score was in doubt late into this game, and then when I heard that went to three overtimes, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah. Well,
I absolutely couldn't believe it.
I was the same way. Well, you know, I turned it on. I kept seeing on the ticker Virginia Tech Marshall tied late in the game. I said, well, what is going on down there? So I flipped over there, and it was just perplexing to watch. Virginia Tech is just, on offense, they've got Logan Thomas and nothing else. Nothing else. The receivers were dropping passes, and Logan Thomas isn't really, he's no Jameis Winston. We'll just put it that way. Okay, he's not a terrible quarterback, but he's not a great quarterback at all. I think that he was propped up early in his career by having some good running backs around him, and it, you know, it takes the pressure off of him. Having Treshard Choice and Calvin Johnson is going to take some of the pressure off Reggie Ball, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Same kind of thing. Is that you can be a serviceable quarterback if you have a supporting cast around you that can kind of carry the load. But Logan Thomas doesn't have anybody around him. They didn't look like they could run very well. And when they were running, when they were running, it was Logan Thomas running. They didn't hand it off to a running back. So
yeah,
the receivers, like I said, dropped a couple passes. It just looked like, and they were not bad passes. I mean, they were in their hands and they dropped them. And I was just like, my goodness, this is just really pathetic. Now, I know they had some trouble on special teams even earlier in the game, but in the end of the game, their special teams did kind of save the game by blocking a field goal, but their kicker missed two field goals. He missed a field goal during the game that if he had won,
he actually missed three field goals.
Okay, there you go, three field goals. Yeah, because he missed two field goals in the first two overtimes, and then during the game earlier on, he had missed a field goal. So, you know, he was just all over the place, and it was a walk-on kicker. So he had never kicked in game situations before.
But we talked about this earlier in the season about how Beamer ball really might be a thing of the past. And yeah, they did block a field goal.
Right.
But it really is perplexing. I mean, you shouldn't be missing three field goals. I don't care if it's a walk-on or not. And one of them was a 55-yarder, but still, it just seems very, very strange that they're playing so bad on special teams, something that's been their specialty for
kind of their
decade.
Calling card. What got them to be good is they said, okay, everybody else focuses on offense, we're going to focus on special teams and defense.
Yeah.
And we'll win those two facets of the game. Because if you win two facets of the game, you're probably going to win.
Yeah, usually. But again, they didn't perform well on third down. They're two out of 16 on third down.
Well, because look at it. You at that point in third down, who's the ball's hands going to be in? Logan Thomas. He's not able to mask any deficiency there. Everybody's going to be stalking and saying, okay, we'll force you to throw it.
Yeah. And they did have a 100-yard rusher from their running back, Trey Edmonds.
Okay.
But I think a lot of that was on one big carry. Or most of that was on one big carry at some point in the game. I didn't watch most of it.
Yeah, like I say, when I saw it, it was Logan Thomas to throw or Logan Thomas to run. I mean, they were putting all their eggs in that basket. And I don't think that's fair to him as a player, because if you have put everything on him, you know, everybody then can basically spy on him and say, okay, we're just going to make him win the game.
Yeah. And we're obviously going to talk a lot about this in the next podcast, but this, I mean, I'm super nervous about Georgia Tech facing Virginia Tech, because I don't really know what team you're going to get.
Right, I agree. And that's the thing, is that I thought, well, with East Carolina, when they won that game 15-10, I said, well, maybe they're just, you know, looking ahead. But with a scare like that, you'd think that you would be really ready for Marshall.
Yeah.
And you weren't.
Yeah. So, and now they have to prepare for us. They have 2 days to prepare for us.
Right. And you played a triple overtime game. So that's a long game that you played. So you're going to be, you got injuries and stuff. So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah. So, but we'll talk more about that as in the next podcast.
Okay.
We'll do a preview for that game. Moving on, Georgia Tech played UNC over the weekend, and that was a wild game. I'm sure you watched the whole thing, Andrew. I was at the game. I got completely soaked at that game. But yes, that was one of the, despite the weather and despite the kind of the scare that it was for a little while anyway, that was one of the more exciting games I can remember going to. That was a fun game.
So we got down early.
Yeah, they scored a touchdown on their first drive, went for two, which I think was a big mistake, because they didn't get it, and I felt like they were kind of chasing that 1 point all game.
I don't understand why that what your reasoning there was. When they lined up like that, I just couldn't figure out.
Well, the reason, from what I read, is, you know, they were doing one of those, you know, kind of like what Oregon does and some other teams will do it, where they line up and they see if they have the numbers, and if they have the numbers, they go for it. Because what they did was they lined up like they're going to kick a field goal, and they spread everybody out. And usually what they end up doing is they bring them all back in and then kick the extra point. But in this one, I guess they thought that they had the numbers, and then they ran it and they didn't get it. And so they were automatically, you know, they had the touchdown, but you never want to, especially early in the game like that, I never feel like it's worth the risk to do that.
Yeah.
So
if you get it, you're a genius. If you don't, exactly, then everybody's going to be second-guessing you. So
exactly.
You have to get it, and you didn't. Now,
and then they score another touchdown, and Renner looked really good, especially in the first half. And in the rain, nonetheless, he was making his passes. We weren't getting very good push on their offensive line. I mean, they were just after those first two touchdowns that they scored, you know, 13-0, I was just like, oh my gosh, we're going to lose this game.
Well, it's interesting. I saw that the stats were, around that time, they were getting about 8 yards a play.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous. And so we got down 13-0, and not to spoil it for anyone who hadn't seen the whole game yet, but
well,
those friends of ours who might be in, you know, Peru or Botswana or someplace who are waiting to get the game, but you know, we go come back and win it. We're down 13-0 now. Will, I'm not sure if you know. Do you know? Is this the largest deficit we've ever come back from in a game?
No,
it's not. You're right. What was the largest one?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I want to say 2008 against Georgia.
It was also in the rain. if you remember. Yeah, also in the rain. Now, here's a little interesting tidbit, and I was waiting to bring this out later in the season, but since it happened again, we come down 13-0, and that in the game against Georgia, we're down 16-0. Do you know, both in the rain, do you notice any other similarities between those games?
Well, first off, we were down by 16 points, not 16-0, but I understand what you're saying.
Yes.
Similarities in that game, besides the weather?
Yes.
Oh, gosh.
This is a very, very nitpicky, interesting statistic here.
I have no idea. Tell me.
Well, Will, we are 2-0 in games that Paul Johnson wears a baseball cap. Both games in the rain, and both games we got down really big early and came back and won it.
So you have verified that those are the only two games that he has worn a baseball cap?
Can you ever remember another game where Paul Johnson wore a baseball cap?
The 2008 game is the only one I can think of.
And he wore one yesterday.
Wow.
So,
okay, then.
You know, just an interesting little fun fact. If you want to email us at fourthandshortpodcast@gmail.com and say, hey, no, against Wake Forest in 2010 he wore a cap or something else, if you've got it, if you have actual evidence, let us know.
That is a really interesting, you know, maybe we should email him and tell him that he needs to wear a baseball cap more often.
You know, well, I mean, it might be bad for our blood pressure, because I think the baseball cap, it gets us down early, but then we're able to come back late.
That's true.
So, I mean, maybe it's something we could do occasionally, kind of like when Paul Hewitt used to wear the gold suit.
Yeah.
You know, do you remember that? That kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, we'll see.
So, as the game went on, the defense really
stepped up.
Really stepped up. The offense started doing what they were supposed to do. We had some really good drives. Justin Thomas had to come in when Vad got the breath knocked out of him, and he led us down the field and got us our first touchdown. We had very, very good games from David Sims and Robbie Godhigh. Godhigh is so good.
Now, Godhigh did have a fumble. He did have a fumble in the game.
He did.
That's something that we got, once again, and we're going to talk about this in a minute, but we got really lucky with the fumbles because we fumbled it several times and just happened to pounce back on it every time. So
yeah. Well, with that all that rain, you know, I'm not really surprised
right.
that there were a lot of fumbles because at times it was really coming down.
Yeah.
And we were kind of joking in the stands. There's a couple times where it would be raining really, really hard when we had possession, and then it would slow down when UNC had the possession. And, you know, I just thought it was a conspiracy. I thought, you know, Swofford was pulling switches somewhere, you know, trying to help UNC out. But with all the rain and with the field as wet as it was, I'm not surprised that there were some fumbles. But we got a lot of breaks.
We did.
With the fumbles and with a few other things, which I think you have a little bit of a list.
Well, yeah. You know, the big one was that the fumbles, there was the David Sims call that was not ruled a fumble.
Yeah, the first touchdown.
The fact that that touchdown, you know, there was no conclusive evidence on that video replay. So the fact that they called it a touchdown on the field is a godsend. Because if they had called that a fumble on the field, they couldn't have overturned it. And that would have been a huge, huge momentum shift. And I don't know if you could have recovered from that. And then the fact that later on in the game, Vad fumbled, or they called it a fumble on the field, but then they overturned it and showed that he regained possession. And, you know, there were those. And then, of course, you know, the holding penalty against UNC was a big momentum shift. It seemed like every momentum change went our favor. UNC did not get any breaks. And if I was a fan, you know, I would have left that game very frustrated because it just would seem like everything went against me that game.
And you would have left very wet as well.
Well, yes.
And
very true.
You would not have been happy.
Would have been very upset. So, you know, I think that we got a lot of breaks, and you can't discount that. We had a lot of breaks in that game that went our favor. And, you know, sometimes when you play a game, sometimes that happens. Sometimes you just got to get lucky a little bit.
Yeah. And there's a lot of things that Georgia Tech needs to work on. It was a good, gritty win. I mean, it wasn't a pretty win. It was a, you know, muddy, like, fight it out to the end win. But the way we played in the second half was very encouraging on both sides of the ball. For one thing, we outscored them, you know, enough to take a substantial lead and win the game. Also, time of possession was huge. We had double of time of possession against them. Even more specifically, in the second half, UNC had the ball for about 7 minutes in the second half. That's it, 7 minutes. And they only gained 58 yards in the second half. That says a whole lot about our defense really stepping up and making some adjustments when they needed to be made to really come through and shut down Renner, who looked like an NFL quarterback in the first quarter.
Yeah, that big interception in the fourth quarter.
Yep.
Huge. I mean that was a big game changer there, because I thought, you know, they're looking like they can start to maybe put a drive together or whatever.
Yeah.
So I agree. Our defense, man, they made some adjustments and they really, really stepped up.
Yeah.
Something you couldn't have said in the years past.
And then the offense, they had some nice long sustained drives that I love to see. The soul crushing one at the end. We converted on some fourth downs late in the game. There's that one fourth and short, mind you, that we did the we hurried up to the line really fast.
Right.
And drew them off sides.
And see, that's the exact opposite of what we usually do, by
exactly.
walking up and then, you know, calling the A back.
It was almost like we were going to run the play, and the defense wasn't ready for it. And they must have, you know, someone must have yelled, you know, to hike the ball. And nobody on the offensive line moved, but someone on the defensive line moved, and they, you know, they got called off sides because of that. And that was, I mean, that was huge. That gave us another first down, and more time was able to come off the clock late in the game.
And there was another one there. In that, it was early. It was that drive in the second half where there was a spot on third down. We got the long play, and it looked like it was going to be fourth and one again.
Yeah.
And they gave us a very good spot, and we got by the nail with football. So that was another thing that, you know, a very generous spot there helped us out.
Yeah. So Jackets are 3-0, very encouraging. Got Virginia Tech next week, and you got to think that we're going to be favored in that game. Just based on the way Virginia Tech has played so far this season, but that's going to be a tough one. A lot of other football happening around the league, and some of them, you know, are there some coaches out there, Andrew, that should be worried or getting worried? I know we've talked about a few.
We have. You know where I'm going with this, Will.
Yeah, I know where you're going.
I have just a simple question. This is for you, and this is for anybody listening, because I think that every year you always have some coaches who going in, maybe they think they're fine, and then you get a couple games in, and the wheels start to come off with the fan base. So
yeah.
My question is, right now, would you rather be Mac Brown, Lane Kiffin, or Bo Pelini? Now, all of these teams won yesterday.
Yeah.
But you got to wonder, have they already lost enough that their fan base is going to be, you know, upset? I mean, Texas, once again, didn't look great. I mean, they were able to run the ball some, and they were able to put some points up. USC offensively was just completely gone. Nothing. They won 17-14 over Utah State, which, you know, I don't know that we have any Utah State listeners out there, but I don't really think they're a big major player. So I think that that's very questionable. You win 17-14. Then Bo Pelini, who they did win. But I think the fan base at Nebraska is getting a little tired of the 9-4 every year. If you look at his record, he's always 9-4. Never taken that next step. And he made some comments in the previous week about saying that he didn't really like Nebraska fans and that he would leave if they wouldn't embrace him. So
well, that was an older audio.
It was.
Correct?
It was. Yeah. And so it surfaced this week. So it's kind of a slanderous thing to just release it when they were down. So my question is, who do you want to be? Who is in the best position to be able to eke out another year?
That's a really good question. I think Lane Kiffin is a foregone conclusion. I can't imagine him making it. Mac Brown, I feel like he's earned another year, just because he does have the national title under his belt. But
see, here's the
Pelini,
thing.
I don't know. I mean, it's so tough. I can't with Pelini, all this stuff is. I know they've been frustrated for a while, but a lot of this angst is a little bit more recent. So I wouldn't want to be any of them. Well, I'd want to be all of them. Being coach college football is probably awesome, but I don't know. I think that if I was going to choose the one that I would least like to be, it's probably Lane Kiffin.
Really? Now, here's my thing is that I think I can make a case for why any of these three would be able to make it for another year. Mac Brown, the interesting thing is all the rumors have been going around with...
What are these rumors?
Right, well, basically, they lose two games. They're giving up. In two games, they gave up, like, a total of 900 rushing yards. It was an ungodly number. And there were some rumors that a booster or someone on the board at the University of Texas had made some inquiries with Nick Saban's agent about whether or not he would be interested in the job. And Nick Saban has said, well, you know, I'm too old to start over. That was his response. I'm too old to start over again.
Yeah.
Well, but, I mean, the thing is that with his history, you can't take any of this as gospel. So this rumor is always going to be swirling around the rest of the season until Nick Saban actually steps on the field in 2014 for Alabama. Because, I mean, you really can't. I mean, let's be honest. He said the same thing when he was at Miami, and then he took the job. So there was talk that, you know, he had made the inquiries to his agent, but it actually turned out that it was several months ago before the season started that, well, what if? You know, what would happen if? And so it kind of did lessen it. But the number that was floated around was that Texas would be willing to pay him $10 million a year to come coach at Texas.
Now, what's he making right now?
He is currently – now, this Nick Saban is the highest paid coach in college football at about $5.5 million, I think, somewhere around there. And Mac Brown is actually the second highest paid coach at about $5.3
million. Wow.
So they're right there neck and neck. And that, to me, is the biggest case for why Mac Brown will not make it another year is because has he earned – does he have enough in the bank to earn him another year – even though he's the second highest paid coach in the country, I mean, shouldn't that guarantee you that you're going to be getting 11 or 12 wins? You're not paying somebody $5 million a year to go 5-7 or 6-6. You're just not.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. And here's the thing is that Nick Saban, would he take $10 million a year to go to Texas?
That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money, but so is $5 million. You're already, I mean, you're not... Do you need that money? No. I mean, I don't know. And so I don't really think that Nick Saban is actually would go to Texas because...
You're asking someone...
Here's the thing.
You're
Mac
offering
Brown,
them double their salary.
Right. Mac Brown is 62 years old.
Yeah.
That you're saying, Mac Brown, you're too old. You need to retire. We're going to go hire Nick Saban. He's 61.
Yeah.
I don't understand that at all. So, you know, Nick Saban's name...
Then he could have, you know, 6 or 7 good years at Texas and... win him a couple of national championships and then retire at Texas and be, you know, have $35 million more dollars or whatever because of that.
Well, I mean,
that's a lot of money. I mean,
if he was there 6 or 7 years, he'd have $70 million more.
Well, versus 35 that he would have at Alabama. So.
Yes, I understand. So,
yeah.
I don't know. It's interesting. I mean, there's also been talk that Will Muschamp, they would call him and take him back. I don't see that happening. I don't know why you would do that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so there are a lot of things. In my opinion, Mac Brown probably gets another year unless they just lose everything they have left. I mean, there's nobody else. The Big 12 is very down this year. They're probably going to lose to Oklahoma, but I think they could win most of those other games because nobody else has any defense either in the Big 12. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see. Now, Kiffin?
Do you think if Nick Saban wins the national championship again this year, do you think that would make it to where he'd be more likely to go or stay?
I don't know. See, here's the thing. Texas obviously has more money than anybody, and they could pay Nick Saban whatever he wanted. But don't you think Alabama would probably try and match anything Texas could offer him?
If they could afford it.
Right. And the only reason you would leave is just for a new challenge. Is Nick Saban getting to the point where he's like, oh, this isn't a challenge anymore, I want to try something new? I don't know. We'll see. But my opinion is that from the things I've heard, people I've talked to, is that the tornado in Tuscaloosa kind of changed Nick Saban. And he, you know, he always, his whole life was the, you know, the job hopper looking for the next job. And then when that happened, Tuscaloosa kind of became home for him. So I just don't see him leaving Tuscaloosa.
Yeah. It's an interesting story.
Now, But. Going back to the other two coaches, Bo Pelini, I think, is actually in a lot worse position than Lane Kiffin. Because I think that their fan base, you got to understand, in Nebraska, there's nothing else. And in at USC, you know, he makes a lot of money. And even if they win ugly, I think that USC can win more games because I think that the Pac-12 doesn't have as much as the Big Ten as far as competition-wise. So I think they still could go 9-3 this year and him get another year. Bo Pelini, you know, we'll see.
Yeah. One other game that I would want to talk to you about, Andrew, because you were at this game.
I was.
Is the FSU game from this past week. And then after we'll talk about this, we'll get into the rundown and quickly talk about the other games. But because you were at this game, I wanted to focus on this game a little bit. What did you see from FSU in this game?
Well, if anybody goes back and listens to the tape, you might have heard me say something along the lines that famous Jameis might not throw an incomplete pass.
I was
way off there. I think Jameis Winston's a gamer, and I think that he had a good game. He had a good game, but nothing terribly spectacular. He had a couple overthrows, a couple drop passes. I mean, he had a good game, though. He played in one drive in the second half, and he was taken out. So it wasn't ever in doubt. Offensively, they were able to put up points. But the game was pretty much already over when the FSU offense took the field the first time. We were already up 7-0, and it was late in the first quarter, and basically, Bethune-Cookman couldn't put the ball in, so I mean, we were able to just run the ball in for a second score. So, famous Jameis really didn't have to do a lot. The game was in the running back's hands, and that's the thing, is that with all of the hype that Jameis Winston has gotten, the running back core at Florida State is phenomenal, and any one of the running backs could take the game into their hands. And if you look at the stats, I mean, we had a lot of rushing yards yesterday. Devonta Freeman, James Waller Jr., everybody knew that they were going to be phenomenal running backs. They still are. You know, they still are. But the interesting story, and I think I've mentioned it already, is Carlos Williams coming over from defense. The kid can hit the hole, and he can get through there, and he is a beast at running back. I think that most teams are going to have a lot of trouble with FSU this year because of that running game. Even if, let's say you're able to somehow take Jameis Winston out of the game, I don't see why you can't just line up and beat everybody on the line. Offensive line average weight is something like 320 pounds. You're just going to beat everybody off the ball.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you got three running backs who are 220. So you're bigger and stronger than everybody else. You should just be able to line up and just run the ball through. Now, that being said, defensively, it was a little frustrating because you were playing a very vanilla defensive package, and Bethune-Cookman's quarterback was just able to run around and scramble and break containment. So that's concerning that he was able to break containment without having to bring blitzes. We started bringing blitzes later in the game, and you know that changed it, and he wasn't able to run around as much. But looking ahead to a game like Clemson, you don't like the idea that you can watch a quarterback run around and scramble for positive yardage consistently.
Because Boyd's going to be able to do that.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, once again, you have some good guys in the secondary who, when you started bringing blitzes and those kinds of stunts, it did change the game and he wasn't able to run around as much. But, you know, once again, it does raise the question that, you know, when you face a better quarterback, will they be able to run around on you? So,
yeah.
It's interesting. But once again, the game wasn't in doubt.
Are you going to have trouble with your allegiances when and if FSU and Georgia Tech ever get together?
Well, we're not on the schedule this year, so.
But we may be.
Oh, Will.
I will hope that you choose the right thing, so. And I'm
I'll do my best. I'll wear, you know, Tech stuff, and I'll have, you know, FSU socks or something. Right?
No. Anyway, okay, let's get to the rundown from this week's schedule, and see how we did. We just talked about Florida State and Bethune-Cookman. We both picked Florida State for that one, so no problem there. Next one is Clemson at North Carolina State. This was actually a pretty good game, Andrew. North Carolina State kind of kind of had Clemson scared a little bit for a little while. And if it hadn't have been for a touchdown that was taken back because it appeared that the runner may or may not have had a foot out of bounds, that could have been a very, very different game.
That was a terrible call. That's I have a big problem. I mean, here's the thing. You let him play. And then if you think once the whistle is blown, the play is dead.
Yeah.
You know, so if he thought maybe he stepped out, you just let him run and then you bring him back. You review it, you look at it. I mean, that's my opinion. That's what happened in our game.
Yeah.
You know, they let it play because you blow the whistle, it's dead. You know, and I think that was a poor decision on the referee's part there. Let him, because if you look at the replay, it doesn't look like he steps out.
Yeah, and there were a couple of stills that came out where you could maybe, if you squint, see that he went out of bounds. I don't know. That was a rough call. And of course, a couple of plays later, they fumble the ball.
Right.
And Clemson
scores. That was a game changer. Yeah, absolute game changer.
And you know, they only won by 12 points at the end of the game. So kind of a 14-point swing there with that one play. So
right.
It was really interesting to see that happen. And
but here's the thing: I did think North Carolina State's defense, despite what David Pollack was saying about them during the game, really stepped up. And I think that, you know, they if you remember, I think I said they could be a dark horse. So they, you know, they lost their quarterback, and I was a little down on them. But I think that they've got some good players over there, and you know, they might be pretty good this year.
Yeah, and David Pollack, he was a little bit annoying during that game. I have some Clemson friends who they were getting tired of the use of the verb Clemsoning that he liked to bring up over and over and over and over. So, but that's
we'll talk about him in our next. We'll talk about him in our next.
Okay, anyway, let's move on. We both picked Clemson for that game. North Carolina, Georgia Tech, we both picked Georgia Tech. Go Jackets. Marshall at Virginia Tech, we also both picked Virginia Tech. Wake Forest at Army. Wake Forest, man, Wake Forest is just hanging on by a thread here. They beat Army, but not by much.
It was actually 10-5 in the second quarter, and I saw that score, and my wife said, 10-5, are we in baseball season right now? What's going on?
Yeah. So Wake Forest, I think they're in for a pretty long season once they really get into the conference slate. It's not good for them. Next game was crazy. Pittsburgh at Duke. Who would have thought that there would have been 113 points scored amongst those two teams in that game?
Not I.
That was crazy. 58-55. And Duke almost came back and won that game because they were losing by quite a bit, and they scored like 20-something unanswered points in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I saw it. It was 58-41, pretty midway through the fourth quarter, and I was like, wow, that's over. And
yeah.
Then when I saw the final score, they came back. And I mean, look, I think Duke has got an offense. You know, maybe that says something about Pittsburgh's defense. I don't know, but it – with the score of that game, it made me a little concerned about us playing Pittsburgh later in the year.
I know. Because they have put some points up in a lot of their games this year. So it is a little bit concerning because this year alone, they scored 13 against Florida State, but then they scored 49 against New Mexico and 58 against Duke. So they might have a little bit of an offense there. We'll see. But I picked Pittsburgh and Andrew picked Duke, so you were wrong on that one. But not a bad pick. Syracuse beat Tulane pretty badly.
Once again, another huge offense, big offense for Syracuse. They put up 54.
Syracuse.
Yeah.
And Andrew, you and Maryland.
Yeah.
you're having a hard time with Maryland this year. You picked them to lose to FIU at the beginning of the year, and that did not happen. And you picked West Virginia this time around, and I'm not sure what to think about this.
Here's the thing. For our Maryland fans, I know that you all hate me, and I'm not going to be like Heather Dinich and deny that you know, I dislike someone. I don't particularly like Maryland that much.
Yeah, I can understand. But Maryland runs all over West Virginia, not even really close.
No, so. I mean, here's the thing. I like Ralph Regan a lot. I think what they did to him was wrong. So I don't really have a lot of warm feelings for Randy Edsall. But that being said, you know, good win for the conference. I mean, win these out of conference things and win them big. You know, I haven't really thought Maryland was much to write home about, but maybe Maryland is better than we all thought.
Yeah, they must be, because they're winning games pretty handedly. So
yeah, we'll see what happens when they play Clemson and FSU. I mean, maybe they can put some big wins on the board. I don't think so, but we'll see.
Yeah, yeah. Next game was Virginia Military Institute at Virginia. Virginia wins. We both picked that. And then Savannah State gets absolutely crushed by Miami. One thing that they did in this game was they actually, the fourth quarter was a 12-minute quarter.
Really?
They shortened it, and they had the running clock. So, a blowout, an absolute blowout by Miami. So, that'll be really interesting. Because if they beat South Florida and Georgia Tech beats Virginia Tech, then that'll be two 4-0 programs. A big divisional game coming up in a couple weeks if that happens.
I think they'll be able to beat South Florida.
I think they will too. The okay, that does it for the ACC. In the SEC, Vanderbilt beats Massachusetts, and
that was rough early for Vandy. They didn't look good very early in the game.
Yeah, but they ended up winning pretty easily by the end of the game, took control in the second half. North Texas at Georgia. This was an interesting game. It was close for a while in this game. And Georgia is having some special teams issues. One of the things that we talked about during the Clemson game is, and I think it's going to be a running theme all season long for us, Andrew, but long snappers.
Yeah.
Long snappers are continuing to be an issue here, and we talked about that article in the New York Times about the
we'll link it on the website,
because I feel like this is a good article for those of you out there who are interested in long snappers, because I know I am. But they had a high snap on a punt that ended up, the punt was blocked and then run back for a touchdown. They also gave up a touchdown on a kick return. So special teams problems.
Yeah, all over the place. So, and if you remember a few years ago, people were talking about how Paul Johnson was arrogant and set in his ways because he wouldn't hire a special teams coach. Well, Mark Richt doesn't have a special teams coach. So does he need to change and hire one? I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know.
Some people are saying that now.
Yeah, well, they ended up winning pretty big, I guess, 45-21. But I guess if you're Georgia, you kind of want to have a larger margin of victory against a team like North Texas.
Well, Georgia's defense shut down North Texas. They couldn't move the ball. But, yeah, special teams really made the game more interesting than it had to be.
Yeah, exactly. But we both picked Georgia in that game. Arkansas at Rutgers. I didn't watch this game. Did you watch this game at all?
I did. You know, Rutgers won this game.
Yeah, they did. They sure did.
That's a surprise.
Yeah, and what does that say about the big bad SEC when you have one of your strong guys losing to little old Rutgers?
Yeah, you know.
No, but I'm just kidding. Arkansas is not one of your big teams in the conference, but Rutgers, were undefeated. They were undefeated up to that point, though.
Yeah, I mean, Rutgers isn't really. I mean, this is a marquee win for the program.
Yeah,
I mean, really, like, how many out-of-conference wins does Rutgers have, you know, I mean, in their history? So I think that that's a really big marquee win for Rutgers, and I mean, mad props to them. I mean, that's huge for their program, huge for their program.
So, good win for them.
Good win for them, and the next game, very interesting, Tennessee at Florida. Florida wins the game, but they have a big loss also. If you don't know, Jeff Driskel, their quarterback, out for the year. Does this affect their I mean, what do you think is the implications here? Is that going to really turn things around for them, or do you think this is better? You know, what's going to happen to Florida?
I don't think Driskel was very popular to begin with.
Right.
So a lot of Florida fans might view this as, okay, well, let's see what the other guy could do. I think that Florida was in a situation where the most popular guy on their team was the backup quarterback.
Right. And, I mean, he didn't start off the game well. The beginning of the game, Driscoll started off by throwing an interception that was returned 63 yards for a touchdown. So, you know, it didn't start off well. And, you know, offensively, Florida has just looked so anemic.
Yeah.
You know, and to bring the backup guy in and then you put up 37 points, you know, I mean, we'll see what happens. I mean, maybe Tennessee is really, really bad.
I think Tennessee is really, really bad. But
it wouldn't surprise me.
But, yeah, so we'll see what happens to Florida down the stretch. But, yeah, losing your starting quarterback, you never want that to happen.
Right.
But in this situation, it might not be the end of the world. It's not like, you know, if Georgia
it's
lost
like,
Aaron Murray, then that would be
right.
a big deal.
Right.
But I don't think it's a huge deal for Florida for the rest of their season.
The strength of the team is not the offense.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. The other games, the next few, no big surprises. Texas A&M wins easily against Southern Methodist. Alabama beats Colorado State pretty easily. Mississippi State beats Troy. Missouri beats Indiana. We picked all of those games. The last one was Saturday night game of the week or whatever, but Auburn at LSU.
The old rivalry game.
Mm-hmm. And this one kind of started to get out of control pretty quick. LSU scores two quick touchdowns in that game, and Auburn kind of fought their way back into the game a little bit, especially in the third quarter.
Right, but they just too little too late. They threw an interception late that kind of sealed it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the thing is with that Gus Malzahn offense, I mean, they can score points in a hurry, but at the same time, you're throwing the ball so much, you're prone to mistakes.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what happened.
Yeah. And so they end up so LSU ends up winning that game, which was expected. And
yeah, I thought it would be a lot closer than it was, to be perfectly honest. I think I said that. But, you know, I'm not surprised LSU came out with a win.
Yeah. So those are the games of this week. Andrew, you went 15-3. I went 17-1. So almost Rutgers beating Arkansas was the one that I missed.
Yeah, nobody saw that coming.
No one saw that coming. So for the season, Andrew, you are now 64-12, and I am 66-10. So I have a little two-game lead there. So I'll take that to the bank.
Take it to the bank. Take it to the bank.
Taking it to the bank.
It's
all right. Well,
long
that's
season.
That's a show. We're gonna try to get the next podcast up a little bit earlier for our listeners, since we have the Thursday night game, and we want to give plenty of time for our people who are interested in Georgia Tech
right.
to be able to listen to us. So we're going to try to get it up a little bit earlier than we have been. We've been trying to get it up Wednesday afternoon. We're going to try to get it up Wednesday morning, so you'll have the whole day to listen to it on Wednesday.
Yep.
But anyway, thank you again for listening to the Fourth and Short podcast. Again, you can find us at, if you're not already there, you can find us at fourthandshort.com. And
don't go to like none of those crazy ones like .biz or .gov.
No. We're just regular old .com. And you can email us at fourthandshortpodcast@gmail.com. And that said, my name is Will Patton.
And I'm Andrew Brown. Follow me at Downtown Andrew B.
There you go.
On Twitter.
Get on Twitter, too. So, all right. Well, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.